This is transactional entertainment lawyer Joshua Lastien, and you're listening to Studio 2009, only on the Geekcast Radio Network.
There's nothing wrong with your podcast player. Do not attempt to adjust the volume. Hello and welcome back into Studio 2009. I'm, of course, TFJ and Mike. Joining me once again, as always, for 12 months of Star Wars is Mr. Dave Draper. Hi, Dave. How are you?
Not dead yet, so that's something.
That's definitely something. Yeah, me either. Although I think the universe has cursed this podcast episode. This is episode 107, folks. You're in the middle of 31 days of December on Studio 2009. We are releasing 31 episodes.
Well, you did that
episodes.
Yourself with this genius.
No.
31 days of December. Yeah.
No, podcasts. That's not why it's cursed. That's not why this episode is cursed.
At some point, one of them had to be cursed. Come on. Yeah, one 31 podcasts you're going to get away with.
You can't
get away clean with all of them.
No, unfortunately, I wish, but unfortunately not. Something always goes wrong, you know, cross my fingers, hope to die, et cetera, poke a needle in my eye or something. But no, literally right before we recorded, I experienced about a 5.5, 6.5 second power outage, and I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake. Must have been one of the other elderly states people that live in this building that probably turn their stove on and their toaster on at the same time. Because it's not storming outside, so
that sounds less like a them problem than a your building problem.
Well, yeah, but most people know in these older buildings you can't run the microwave and the toaster at the same time, or else your power gonna go out.
Okay,
it's a weird thing. Anyway, we are here. We head once again to a galaxy far, far away as we visit Hollywood. That's right. We continue the 12 months of Star Wars spotlight here in the land of filmmaking as we make our way through Craig Miller's Star Wars and More Movie Memories. Technically, Star Wars Memories and then the other book, the second book, the most recent one, is More Movie Memories. But I like combining the titles.
And they also, like, the More Movie Memories has a big chunk about Star Wars, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Come on, too. And
so this, these books.
We should explain who Craig Miller is first. I mean, that which ties into the books, because the books are about his journey.
Yeah.
But he was a fan. He was a comic book / science fiction fan back in the old days, like the old Comic-Con days when Jack Kirby would show up. And he got a job as fan relations. I don't remember the title. I'm going to be terrible because I read these books like 2 weeks ago. But he got a job as fan relations for Star Wars. Like after he worked for Lucasfilm after Star Wars hit and during the production of Empire. So he's the guy who kind of created the fan club. He created Bantha Tracks. He was involved like – He and Charlie Lippincott are like the two guys behind the scenes that were like really keeping Star Wars in the public eye kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's basically a writer, television producer.
He is now, yes.
Producer, yes, absolutely. And yeah, I mean, he
writes a lot of cartoons. He did an episode of The Deke G.I. Joe. Mm-hmm. Did something called Dragon Tales, which apparently people have heard of. I hadn't because I'm not a little kid and I don't have little kids and I'm not.
Oh, he did a couple episodes of Dino Saucers. Nice.
Hey, Dino Saucers.
That's awesome. Yep. He did one episode of Beast Wars, which I was going to watch before this and I ran out of time.
I saw the Deke G.I. Joe, but it was weird. He keeps talking about how Beast Wars was called Beast Machines in England.
Yeah, so what he means by that is that, no, and I don't want to...
Because Beast Machines is like a separate thing here in America.
Yeah, it's the second series to that Beast era of Transformers. It's the series
after Beast Wars. Yeah, I know, I watched it.
Okay. Well, it's 25th anniversary.
That's the one where they go back to Cybertron and Megatron escapes and turns everybody, like brainwashes everybody and turns them into vehicles because suddenly he's anti-organic. And he gets split in half. And then in the end, it turns out that Cybertron was organic all along, which is a crap ending. Yeah, that was Dan Didio, who went on to DC Comics.
No, that was not Dan Didio.
Are you sure?
Yes, I'm absolutely positive. Beast Machines is 25 years old. We've been covering Beast Machines on the Geekcast Radio Network for the last 15 and a half years. It was Bob Skeer and Larry DiTilio. Larry didn't come over. Who came? It was Robert N. Skeer because we've interviewed him, and it was a couple other people.
I could have sworn there was a huge amount of fan hatred towards him at the time.
To Skeer, probably, not to Didio.
To Dan Didio, yeah.
No. Dan was not.
Which is what I thought that was how I even heard the name, dude.
No. He wrote the episode The Probe from Beast Wars. And yes, over in England, it had to be, and in Canada, too. Canada, Beast Wars went from Beast Wars to Beasties. And then, yeah. It's a thing. It's a whole thing. But oh boy, I loved reading these books. These books were really
They were very interesting. Yeah. Yes.
Marty Eisenberg and Robert N. Skeer were the developers on Beast Machines. That's what I was trying to think of. The second guy, it was Marty that did it. But yeah, Didio has nothing to do with Beast Machines or Transformers, that he's all DC. Where do we want to start with this?
I have no idea, man.
I've been a really avid reader since I was a kid, but it has been a long time since I read a book that's two books, technically, 430 pages times two, or whatever the page count is on the first. I know that the second one is 430 pages because I literally just finished More Movie Memories this morning as of this recording. But something like 800, 900 something pages, I haven't read books like that in probably 15 and a half years because I switched to audiobooks.
Yeah.
But I love reading autobiographies, and I love hearing it in the author's voice, and obviously, you know, you have to infer that when you're actually reading it. But I love it when authors do, especially for autobiographies, they do the reading of the audiobook themselves. And
always the best.
Yeah, that's always the best. I'm going to ask him when we interview him next episode if he has thought of doing the audiobook versions of these, because as far as I know, there are no audiobook versions of Star Wars Memories and More Movie Memories. So there's that. Yeah, so creating and running the official Star Wars fan club, he oversaw the fan mail and working with licenses, producing projects ranging from episodes of Sesame Street to commercials for Underoos, like you mentioned.
Mentioned that off air, but yes.
It still worked. Operating R2-D2 and spending weeks on the set of The Empire Strikes Back and Mark.
Yeah, Hamill, that's a little like. He operated R2-D2 in some behind-the-scenes stuff like Donnie Marie show. He didn't operate R2 on Empire.
No.
I know, but the way you're reading it, it's like it's sounding like operating R2-D2 instead of Empire Strikes Back. It's like he did that at like appearances. Like one of the neat little things is he talks a bit about fan mail back in the day, because back in the day they didn't have Twitter and email and all this stuff, and they would just send their mail to Lucasfilm, or, you know, and he was one of the guys that handled the fan mail. And when people would ask for like a picture of an autograph of Darth Vader, he was the guy that signed the autograph. Because, you know, Darth Vader isn't a real person. You know, if they asked for like Mark Hamill's autograph or James Earl Jones's autograph, they would forward those on to other people.
Yeah.
But like for Darth Vader or C-3PO, he specifically said he signed Darth Vader's autograph a lot.
Yeah. So, which is very cool.
He mentions in, I think, More Movie Memories that when that came out at a convention he was at, suddenly everybody wanted his autograph.
Mm-hmm. Yep. I mean, like I said, he's had a 50-plus year career in Hollywood doing all this stuff, and these books are such fascinating. Like, when I was reading Star Wars Memories, it was like, holy crap. We're basically on the inside of what was happening almost 50 years ago now, you know, when that was being made and things. Same thing with Empire.
Yeah, it's like I said during the holiday, because I don't know when you're chopping these all up. I'm a little, my brain's a little mushy. But I said during the holiday special episode that someone, one of the people they interviewed in the Disturbance in the Force, which is a making of the holiday special documentary, said that that was kind of the most interesting time was between Star Wars and Empire, because that was when nobody had a plan, much like today, except everybody was finding their way and everybody was making their rules. And so he was there in the middle of this chaos that was taking shape as the Lucasfilm Empire, and kind of reports back on what it was like, his little section of it. You know, he goes into great length about each building that they were in and how they moved around. They were like, it's weird that like, it's weird for me, like, cause I always associate Star Wars with Fox.
Okay.
In my, because every movie began with the 20, dun, 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 yep. dun, 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 you know, the 20th Century Fox logo. Mm-hmm. But their offices were at Universal, because that's where Lucas had his deal.
Yep.
And it's you know, and then he moved, and then they moved to another building, and then they moved to the Egg Building, which was this huge building they renovated. And this is all before they moved to the ranch. They didn't have a ranch back then, you know. Yeah. Well, I mean, to me, that's interesting. Like,
yeah, no, I'm not. I'm laughing because of remembering reading, you know, him talk about that. Yeah, no, absolutely. It's absolutely interesting. I'm not laughing at you telling us that. I'm saying that, yeah, that's that egg building was cool as hell.
The photos
that are in the book. Yeah, absolutely. No, and it's just one of those things where it's an experience that neither you and I could never have had. It's not something because obviously we're younger than he is.
Yeah, I was going to say, I was six.
But, okay, but my point is...
You weren't born.
No, I know. I didn't exist yet. I was also, not... Like,
it's interesting because, and this is sort of jumping around, but like, because of his, I don't know how you want it, like his youth, his interests, I don't say backstory or origin story, but like, he'll then like, because he was in the fan scene, even before he got into Star Wars, because he was in that community of conventions and getting together, but like, he'll casually drop, oh, I'm best friends with this guy. I know this famous science fiction author, you know? Because he was friends with them before they became a famous science fiction author, because they were all interested in the same things. It kind of only makes sense that he got a job with the defining science fiction experience of the 20th century.
Absolutely. Yeah, no, it is very, very fun. And yes, folks, you will hear this episode, the interview we will be doing with Craig at some point. And then for Christmas, you will hear the holiday special and Lego holiday special episode. Yeah. So that comes after this. So there you go, folks. There's a preview of.
I believe I mentioned in the holiday special episode that Life Day is November 17th, sir.
Yes.
Not Christmas. It's not Christmas.
But.
It's not Christmas.
Yeah, well.
November 17th.
Yeah, it's November 17th, but it's going to be released on November 9th. So
That's closer. That's closer than...
No, not November. December. It's December. Ooh. Well, anyway, it doesn't matter. It's close enough.
Well, it's not like Jesus was born December 25th anyway. Sorry, going to get in trouble for that one, but it's true. They moved it to coincide with the pagan holiday of the Yule.
So log? Yule log?
The Yule time,
yeah.
It's called Yule time. That's where they got the Yule log from. Is Yule time? They. That's how they got more people to join the church.
All I can think of is, holy shit, where's the Tylenol?
I'm sorry that historical facts occasionally bump into religious.
No, content. Hey, don't apologize. It's not your fault.
That's what we. You've ever wondered why a big pine tree is associated with a holiday that was, you know, born in the Middle East?
Yeah, it's a little...
Don't even get me started about the Easter rabbit.
That guy over there, that's just a guy in a suit.
And don't even get me started of the tradition of the Life Day blue balls, man. You don't even want to know where that comes from.
No.
Because it doesn't even make any sense, because they watch porn on Life Day. So why do they have blue balls? I don't know. It doesn't make sense. The entire Wookiee holiday, it's all just made up. It's all just it's all just religious propaganda of the high Wookiee religious order.
And so Craig said yes to Star Wars.
Star Wars memories.
Yes. Like you said, where he talks about running into various people or being friends with various people. I love the chapter where George, Mark, and Harrison have lunch.
I love the punchline of that.
Yeah.
Harrison gets him to pay for lunch.
Yes, exactly. Yeah.
Because that's so Harrison Ford.
Of course. You know, I mean, after all, he did shoot first.
He did.
Yep. But yeah, no, reading these was so fun. And just the chapter on how initial reviews of Star Wars went from glowing praise to scathing criticism. Like, again, I wasn't alive during this time. You were six or seven or somewhere around there.
I don't know. And, like, I remember being a fan of sneak previews with Siskel and Ebert, but I don't remember. The first one I remember, Star Wars one of theirs, I remember was Jedi.
Mm-hmm.
So I was really young, and it is one of those things. Like, apparently, because I think I watched a thing on them on YouTube. Like, they were, as I recall, they weren't exactly super. Like, they liked it okay, but like it became a like it's one of those things. Like, even though it was a huge hit at the time, like with the reviewers, it became a classic down the road a little bit. Was one of those, like, well, looking back on it, it was actually a great film, you know. And I remember the famous story, like, Craig doesn't tell it, but there's a famous story about Harlan Ellison did not like Star Wars, and then he saw Empire, and his attitude changed. Like, he thought, okay, well, this is now a classic. I believe it was Harlan Ellison, completely changed his opinion of the Star Wars trilogy after Empire, because it's one of those things, like, we're so used to it being this thing. You know, that it's weird to, I think I said in another episode, I hate to keep repeating myself all the time, that there was a documentary about Star Wars, and they really played up how much of a long shot it was. Like, Craig Miller talks about, like, Alan Ladd Jr. was the only guy at Fox who believed in the project. And, like, you know, I mean, the reason it's at Fox is because Universal didn't want it. Nobody wanted it. Nobody wanted science fiction. Because it would generally didn't do well, and it was considered a kiddie thing, and it was associated with bad 50s B movies. And the thing in this documentary is everyone's going, oh, you know, I didn't think it was going to do very well. I didn't think it was going to be that big. And then, of course, Ford, because he's Harrison Ford, is like, oh, I knew it was going to be a hit. I knew it was going to be huge all along. Yeah, I knew it was going to be great.
But, I mean, regardless if that's his personality or not, you got to be that way. When looking in the face of critics and then all of a sudden your thing is a success, you have to be that.
Do you? Because literally everybody else was, I mean, you know, I think Hamill and Carrie Fisher were like, oh, we had no idea. We were just doing a thing for like a couple of months and it was going to be a science fiction movie and nobody watches those and nobody cares and then move on to the rest of my career. You know,
but see, that's the thing, though. Like, it Star Wars and
like the joke was that the narrative is that Star Wars was the like I think what I mentioned was that they were playing up the huge gamble of Star Wars so much that when they got to Williams and said, oh, doing a John Williams traditional soundtrack was a big risk, too. And I'm like, this is ridiculous. This is overkill. And he won the Academy Award for Jaws.
Yeah.
Like, but yeah, it was a risk. Nobody expected it to do well. I mean, Star Wars rewrote the rules, you know, because we haven't even gotten to the toy marketing.
Like,
that was a huge thing. Is like they didn't. And it's interesting because their take on it is different than what I've always heard, which is that you didn't do licensing for movies because they came and went too fast, which makes sense. Because they do but. The story I had always heard was that Dr. Doolittle had come out, you know, years before in the 60s with Rex Harrison, and it had this massive licensing push. All these toys, because it was a childhood. I mean, they were still doing Dr. Doolittle books when I was a kid. I don't know if there's still a thing anymore, but like it was so big, and then it crashed, and like the movie was a bomb, and they had just tons of unsold toys, and it was a disaster, and it was like, movies do not. Maybe that's where they got the thing about movies do not, they go too quick. So that the toys in the 70s, you had a lot of TV licensed toys. Like you had $6 Million Man. You had Mego had Star Trek. Mego's Planet of the Apes toy line was based on a short-lived TV show, which is why you have the two human characters from the TV show, and then you have a generic astronaut who's, you know, what's his name? Charlton Heston. Well, I mean, I guess he was supposed to be Charlton Heston. He was just astronaut. But like, yeah, so Star Wars kind of redefined that. And I think it's brought up in a Disturbance in the Force that Lucas kind of specifically was trying to keep Star Wars in people's eye, like to not let them not let it fade because Empire was coming up, which is why you had Donnie Marie, which is why you had Sesame Street, which is why you had the horrible holiday special. He wanted to keep Star Wars out there so that people, yeah, you know, because he'd been told by somebody at Universal, oh, people will forget about that by September. And but another thing that people don't realize that seems weird now is movies don't like back in the day, that movie, there's a poster for the 1 year anniversary of Star Wars still in theaters.
Mm-hmm.
Movies don't last all year long if they were big enough.
Yeah.
Like nowadays, absolutely. Even like a thing like Avengers maybe makes it like 2 months, you know?
So a perfect example of this, folks, is the not to switch it over to the robots, but Transformers 1 came out in September. Okay, but
that didn't hit. Well, I said Avengers specifically because those movies make money, and they still can't go. I heard it's a really good movie, but Transformers 1 was a bomb.
Just like the original Transformers the movie was. So, yeah, let's just stick with Endgame since it's the one I pulled up. Endgame was released April 26th of 2019 here in the U.S. And the media release was, let's see, April, probably somewhere around August or September. I forget off the top of my head.
Well, now it's even like...
Yeah.
Most movies, they go right. I mean, you're lucky if they aren't even competing with you on streaming when they come out. They go to streaming immediately. But the point being,
yeah,
that back then, movies played forever because there was nowhere else for them to go.
Right. Yeah. There was no home, especially there was in 77. Yeah, there was no home video. There was no nothing. So,
I mean, probably one of the biggest fights I ever got in with my mother was when it came out on video. And I wanted it. And she was like, nope. Because it was like $100. It was like $70. It was either $100 or $70. It was expensive as hell in the early 80s. They did not have, like, price to own was literally an expression that came out probably late 80s, early 90s.
Yeah.
Because they would sell them to video stores.
Yes.
So then they started selling them to the consumers. And then,
yeah, I started hearing that around 86, 87 when I was 6 or 7.
Price to own.
Yeah. So as an example of a blockbuster movie that came out last year, John Wick 4, released in March of 2023 by May of 2023, it was released digitally. Jeez. So 2 months, literally 2 months almost to the day of a billion-dollar movie being, and that's what I'm saying. I understand.
Well, and then he actually talks about it in the book that even back in the day, the system is set up to discourage long-running movies because it's front-loaded for the studios. The studios get all their money opening weekend, not all their money, but they get. It's like a sliding scale that forms an X, where like at the beginning the studio gets all the money, and then at the end the theaters get all the money. So the longer the movie's in the theaters, the more the money the theaters get, which is why for years we've had this front-loaded opening weekend nonsense where they'll – one weekend after another, they'll knock each other off, which kind of fell off during COVID. But like that had been the model for a long time because that's how the studios get their money. You had like second-run theaters who got –
dollar theaters and things like that. Absolutely, yeah. And the thing about the 2020 and everything else that happened and during all of that and whatever else, it's like, oh, well, we can't get our front end money, or our front end money. Well, let's specifically through Disney and Disney Plus, let's throw it. Like, I remember, was it Cruella? I think it was like, you can watch Cruella at home for $30 more than what you already paid for Disney Plus. Again, going to John Wick 4, I remember when that came out and it literally went to streaming. Or not John Wick 4. There was one of them. There was plenty of movies in 2020, folks, that were supposed to be in the theaters before Fandango bought them. Or no, it was right after Fandango bought Vudu. Fandango at home, and you could spend $40 or $50 to get whatever movie that was supposed to be in theaters at home on your streaming thing, whatever. The whole thing in the last 50 or so more years has just changed so much, and I personally don't like going to theaters anymore. The last time I was at a movie theater was 2018. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, 2018. And the only reason why I remember that was because it was a re-release theatrical airing of Transformers the movie from 1986. Hey, I was six. I didn't get a chance to see it. I saw that movie like after I saw Duke die in the 80s. Anyway.
Duke didn't die.
Yes, he,
there was a radio call at the last minute.
Quote unquote, die, coma.
There was a radio call at the last minute.
Yes. He's in a coma.
Duke's going to be fine. Doc says Duke's going to be fine. Everyone cheers.
Yeah. Okay.
He shows up at the Deke show, so, I mean, he didn't.
Yeah, know. Yeah. But, yeah, no. And one of the things that I love about reading Craig's books is, again, it's a story of a time that,
it's gone. Like I've
already said, yeah, it's literally gone. I think in More Movie Memories, when we get out of that, he talks about certain studios and stuff like that where you used to be able to just go to the boss of the studio and say, hey, I have this idea kind of thing. You can't do that anymore.
He does that towards the end of More Movie Memories. He says that the industry has shifted from creative people to executives.
Yeah.
But, you know, is kind of my knock. I don't know if it was our knock, but my knock on the sequel trilogy and Lucasfilm as it is now. Mm-hmm. Where, you know, it is, and I mean, I can't really get into details, but I have met Hollywood producers, mm-hmm. and they are exactly what you think they are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, they are, like, these guys were out of central, like, if I had to, like, make a movie about movie producers, makers, mm-hmm. these would be the guys, you know, like, because, like, just clueless, you know, they don't really care about you. I mean, it's like, like something out of Wayne's World kind of thing, except instead of that guy was, I can't remember the actor's name.
Rob Lowe.
Rob Lowe was smart at least.
Yeah.
These guys were, I mean, I guess they were good at making movies, making TV shows to be fair, but
yeah. Again, what an interesting life that this guy has had.
One thing I do want to say is, mm-hmm. like, okay, so the first book is Star Wars. So that was mm-hmm. kind of why we're doing this on the podcast. And that was, you know, obviously people would assume that's my wheelhouse because I love Star Wars. But then I read the stuff that he worked on, and like he talks about in the second book that he worked on. And I was like, this is like all the stuff that I grew up with. I mean, this is Baby and Secret of the Lost Legend was like one of those obscure films now. I remember and love. He did Dark Crystal. He did Muppets Take Manhattan. You know, I mean, I was kind of sad that he didn't talk more about Henson and that stuff. It's very quick. Because that's, you know, but like he was involved in all of these other movies that were like a big part of my 80s childhood.
Obviously, like you said, Star Wars memories is why we're here. And. Yeah. But honestly, the dude's life. Honestly, we're here to talk about Craig Miller. We're here to, and we're going to interview him next episode kind of thing, whenever the next episode comes out here in December, Dark Side December, if you want to call it that. But it's one of those things where he's written a book in 2019 specifically about his beginnings, as well as where he led into all of his, like, he's essentially the creator of the Star Wars quote unquote fandom, because he helped create or did create.
I would say less creator than curator.
Okay.
I think he helped curate it. Because, I mean, fandom happens organically.
Yeah.
Because I've seen enough, times they try to create a fandom and it doesn't work. I think he was there to sort of curate it, foster it, take care of it. But I don't think he created it. I think he nurtured it and treated it well so that it grew strong and healthy and turned Star Wars into the thing that it was, you know.
I think what I'm meaning to say is what he did create and run was the official Star Wars fan club.
Well, yes.
So specifically, yes, he didn't create the fandom of Star Wars, George Lucas and all the actors and the writers or whatever else. They did that with the movies, whatever else. But he did specifically create and ran the official Star Wars fan club. So technically, that was what I meant to say. And as a fan himself of science fiction, as it is said in Star Wars Memories and More Movie Memories, he wanted a place. Like, it's like us creating podcasts or creating Facebook groups to hang out in or going to small Kane County conventions. I know Kane County's not small, but you know what
it's
I
not
mean?
A like, convention either. It's a toy show.
Okay. Toy show, whatever. The
C2E2.
Yeah. King County Superior.
Well, they're different things.
Yeah, they're different.
Like you don't go to a. I'm trying to remember what I would like back when I would go to C2E2. I mean, I went to a panel on like Family Guy.
Yep. You're not gonna see that.
You don't go to panels on Family Guy at King County. You go to a booth and buy toys.
Yeah. Okay. I got you. But that's what I meant to say of him starting the official Star Wars fan club and kind of getting the Star Wars fandom sort of organized back in those days a little bit. And
sort of,
the stuff that he sent out to people or the stuff that they gave out at conventions or movie premieres or whatever, like, that is something I wish I could have experienced.
Well, okay, so, like, my collection has grown somewhat because of that book, the first book. One of the things he mentions, which is in weirdly integral to my own Star Wars experience, is they had these books, these little booklets that they gave out at the movies, right? Like Star Wars had little books that they would give away to the fans.
Yep.
And I remember, like, my whole story about that is I was six. We were at a family vacation in Florida visiting my grandmother, and I was kind of rooming with my cousins. And they were all older than me, and they were all talking about a movie that they had seen that was so amazing and so exciting, and they were going to go see it again. And they had this book that had been given out at the theater. So I remember looking through that book and being like, "Whoa, okay." And I want, and the thing that's sort of famous in our family in my little story is I was like, "Can I go with you guys?" And they're like, "Oh no, you wouldn't like it." They literally told me I wouldn't like it.
How wrong but they were.
They didn't want to hang out. They were like, you know, maybe 15 and I was six. So they didn't
want
to hang out
with me. Yeah, yeah.
But I remember that book. And it's weird because that's one of the things I want to ask him about. Because I remember a different book. Because I went on eBay and I tracked it down. Because he mentions it in his book.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, yeah, the book. So I went and I tracked it down and I got a copy. And it's like, this is completely different than what I remember. But he has a picture of it in his book. I'm like, I guess this is the thing. Maybe theaters in Florida got a different book. I don't know. But yeah, but they used to do stuff like that. I remember when the David Lynch Dune came out. Like theaters had like a little sheet of how to pronounce everything, like a little glossary sheet for audiences to try to keep track of everything. But yeah, nowadays it's kind of sad. Like back then they had little books that explained stuff to you, and now it's a popcorn bucket shaped like. A sex doll. Wolverine and Deadpool did that, which was cute. Yes. It's funny, and I got one. But hell yeah, I got a Wolverine sex doll. Well, I mean, they did that because Dune did the popcorn bucket shaped like the worm, which unfortunate. you know, if you're not thinking in terms of a giant sandworm and you're thinking of other things, and I think Deadpool played off of that. But I mean, like, they just showed off the Moana bucket, which is her holding a big wave. You know, like, it's a thing now. Like, but my point being that back then it was more, I mean, education, I cringe at the word educational, but it was just a little more, a little less just sort of cheap consumerism. Also, they gave the book away, whereas the buckets are like all the friggin' money.
Yeah, exactly.
They weaponized it. They monetized it.
Yep.
Because it was about fans.
Yeah.
It was about, you know, it was about, like, now we're not fans anymore. We're consumers.
No, I'm still a fan.
No. But I mean, to them, like, this is kind of his point, is that they don't see it as art. They see it as a product.
Yeah.
And we're not fans. We're consumers. Because that's one of the biggest thing going on in media, entertainment, whatever you want to say these days, and I'm interested in his take on it, is there is a definite friction between the fandom and the creators.
And, oh, absolutely. And
I think some people can go, oh, no, we love the thing. But like, I think it's pretty clear that there are people who are not happy with the direction that things are going and like things the way they were. And it's become political for some reason, which is weird because, I mean, I know people that like, I don't know how deep you want to get into this, but like,
I don't, okay.
On paper would be the perfect, the thing is they'd be the perfect person for who they're shooting for nowadays, right? Mm-hmm. And they don't like it. They liked the Marvel movies the way they were. And, you know, I think they just don't understand because they're thinking in terms of their politics and their agendas. They don't understand that even people who agree with their politics and their agendas wanted to be entertained.
Here's the thing for me. Any writer today needs to leave all reality at home. Here's the thing. Okay. If I get a chance to write Transformers 2, because let's face it, folks, Transformers 1, Transformers 2, Transformers 3, that's what they should all be called from now on, right? But let's just say in some weird alternate universe, Mike Blanchard gets a chance to write Transformers 2. I am going to write a story that fits the characters, like the events that happened during the first film. I'm going to reference that, or I'm going to take those characters beyond where they were. I'm not going to throw in a giant orange tangerine because I feel like it needs to be in there. I'm not going to throw in.
Which is ironic because Unicron is partially orange.
Technically, you're not wrong.
I'm not wrong.
My point is, when I say a writer needs to leave reality at home when he goes to work, he or she or they or them or whatever.
Well, also, I think you're specifically referring fantasy genre fiction.
Yeah, like it needs to be a story. Like you can have like Star Wars. You look at
Star Wars started out as the Vietnam War, and then the prequels were the Bush era.
I understand that. It has its own type, even though we make the allegories to those, which I'm not saying you're wrong. I'm not at all. You are correct. But I'm saying to someone that isn't as deep divey as we are into all of that, to the general audience, going to see a Star Wars movie or watching a Star Wars television show, it has its own set of politics within the universe.
Well, it's escapism.
Right, exactly. It's escapism. And I want to be able to escape the reality of this election year. Deal with it. Then, like, if I'm watching something, if I am watching, listening, I want to be entertained. I don't want to be stressed out. The whole point of watching things and reading things is to not stress. And I think that 50 years ago, in the time that Craig was working at Lucasfilm and the time that Star Wars and Empire and everything was being made and all that, and his later career in More Movie Memories, it's a completely different time than what we have today. And it's a completely different fandom than what we have today, because let's face it, folks, we all know the internet gave birth and gave a voice and gave a keyboard,
yeah, absolutely,
controls,
yeah,
for people to just blindly write. You're not going to take the DeLorean back to 1977 and go into a packed theater of Star Wars watchers and hear somebody yell out something that they would type as an internet comment on a YouTube video. You're just not going to hear that. Whereas now, you know, you've got all this toxicity. I don't deal with fandom toxicity. I don't. I curate my stuff to where I don't see any of that crap because I'm too goddamn old for it. And yes, I know I'm younger than you, yada, 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 yada. But the point is, reading Star Wars memories, reading more movie memories of a time that I didn't know. I mean, I knew it existed, obviously. But, like, getting into reading this, you know, reading Craig's history, reading how he grew up and did adulthood and everything else in those days is extremely – I had so much fun reading both these books because it transported me back to a time when – it wasn't just random people, random comments on the internet. You know what I mean? Am I making any sense here, or am I just ranting?
Yeah, no, I think you are.
Okay, good.
Well, I was going to say the thing about the internet is that it lets you be anonymous, where before you had to be, you know, you said, you can't go into a theater and blah, blah, blah. Well, if you did, people would see you and react immediately.
Yes, exactly.
Whereas now you can just go on, you know, Snape killed Dumbledore, Darth Vader is Luke Swather. You know, you can just be a dick online and, like, have no consequences or minimal consequences.
Oh, no, you have consequences. Trust me. Even if you are a stranger, even if you are a nameless, faceless keyboard warrior.
But people are into causing trouble and getting blowback.
No.
Like, they are. That's
I know they are. But I'm saying, no, not me.
Not you. I'm not saying you. I'm saying.
You're not saying me. I'm saying, like, it's just, oh God, the culture.
I
mean,
we talked about. I can't remember if it was last one or we talked about hate watching and how I don't understand that.
Yeah, it was probably
something about the sequel trilogy. I'll tell you
that. Yeah, it was probably in the sequel trilogy, or it might have been in Mando.
But yeah, I don't get, like, if I don't like something, I don't want to watch it. I don't get pleasure. Yeah. From, like, doing, oh, I don't like this. I'm gonna sit here and do my video about every little thing that I don't like about this. It's like, no, I'm just gonna, like, not waste my time watching it in the first place.
Yep. And that's the thing. That's why advertisements to me are so important. Movie trailers, television commercials, whatever, like television commercials for TV trailers, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
Like, those are so important to me because those tell me in a finite amount of time, a minute, 2 minutes, whatever it is, whether I want to see something or not.
Well, and I mean, trailers got so bad that for about a decade, maybe like 20 years, like I could see five movies for one movie because I'd watch the trailers. And like, I remember the movie, Mr. Holland's Opus, because I had a friend who saw that and he's like, oh, I really liked this. And I'm like, I told him the entire movie. And he's like, you saw it? I'm like, no, I saw the trailer. And this is the true story. Like, and they even had the thing about his son was deaf and he had this. And and then the class comes together again and plays his song. And it's like, it's the whole movie. I didn't need it. Like, in comedies especially. Comedies are the worst because they get all the good jokes, the trailers.
Yeah.
So I don't need to see all these movies because I've seen the trailers. Yeah. But, like, that's bad. Like I remember – back in the day, specifically the Romancing the Stone and Jewel of the Nile, they filmed trailers just for those movies that had, like, little stories of their own that didn't give away – like, I didn't give away everything because I remember Zemeckis sort of got into this thing where, like, he would put spoilers in the trailers. There's one about, like, with Harrison Ford where it turns out Harrison Ford's the murderer, and they put that in the trailer, you know, and then Castaway. They showed Tom Hanks getting home, and it's like, why would you do that?
They just released, as of this recording, folks, you'll hear this in December, but as of this recording in November of 2024.
Oh, yeah.
They released a 4K version of the Brad Pitt movie Seven, I think it was 95, him in Seven. The killer is on the back of the case of the movie. Like,
well, I mean, come on. That's been like 10 years. I mean, 97, that's been like 20 years.
95 is 30 years.
Okay, well, Jesus.
Because I'm literally writing in Mr. Holland's opus for 30
Mr.
years.
Mr. Stark, I don't feel so good.
That's right. That's right. That's funny. You're the second person this week to use that exact line on me, and I'm like, wait, well, oh right.
Uh-huh. He turns to dust after that. That's
I remember.
This is old. Look, I chose the wrong grail. Fuck off. I chose poorly.
only the penitent man will pass.
Only the penitent man will pass. Leave the alone dead.
Okay, we are way off topic.
I know.
Star Wars. No. But no, this is fun. This is very fun. And I hope Craig listens to this and has fun, because I am going to send him this before it is released so he can have a feeling of,
so he can
of
have
how
a chance
we are.
To back out.
Okay, maybe I won't send it to him then.
Before it's too late.
I won't send it to him then. At the end of the day, folks, two books, a lifetime of a person who I would say, and he can correct me when we interview him, I'd say as a fan, as a science fiction fan that he is, like, what a story.
Oh yeah. It's amazing.
What a
And also
story.
Like, as a science fiction fan, like, I don't know, like, how it gets, like, unless it's like Star Trek, I don't know how it gets, like, you got to work for Star Wars.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm a huge Star Wars fan, so yes, I would do anything to work. Even today, I would, if Lucasfilm came knocking, I'd be like, okay, I'll fill out all my, I will do what you ask of me. I would just to be part of that legacy.
Yes.
But yeah, like that's a huge thing. And he wasn't just Star Wars. He was, like I said, I keep going to Baby Secret of Lost Legend because it's got dinosaurs and I like dinosaurs. But, like, you know, the Muppets and
I got to the Muppets chapter and I was like, you worked on Muppets Take Manhattan? Are you kidding me?
A little. So, yeah, he did a little bit. He also did Dark Crystal.
Yeah, he did Dark Crystal. But yeah, seriously, the Muppets. So I don't know who I'm going to do this with. If you want to volunteer, that's fine.
I've never seen that one.
No, really? You've never seen that?
I gave up after – I didn't give up, but, like, I feel like I grew out of it kind of after Caper.
Okay. Yeah. I get you. Yeah. And I always forget, Manhattan was after Caper, wasn't it?
Oh, yes.
Okay. Yeah. See, I got them backwards. I always thought Manhattan was first and Caper was second because I saw Caper – whatever. Anyway, the point is that, like, I was watching those movies at that time. Yes, as a kid, I watched The Muppet Show on TV like every other kid in the 80s did, even though it was started in the 70s.
Yes. See, that's the thing, but, is I watched it as a kid in the 70s.
The 70s, yes. Again, oh boy, folks, 2025.
Although the irony is, if you know anything about Henson, he didn't want it to be a kid's show.
Right,
I think that's why it lingers. I think that's why fans are still fans.
Yeah,
because because like I said, I felt like I kind of grew out of it, but at the same time, like I've gone back. You know, like what I meant was because by the mid '80s, I was in my teens, and you know, you get into your teens. I mean, there was a period where I grew out of Star Wars for like 5 or 6 years. Like, you know, you get to when you're teens, you have an attitude. When you're in your early 20s, you have an attitude about stuff. You don't want to watch baby stuff anymore. And I think the good stuff you come back to and you embrace. And it's just, yeah. I never got into Muppets Take Manhattan because it was in that weird phase where I just was like, yeah, Muppets is good stuff. But then you go back and you watch the old Muppet Show. I mean, the first episode is called Sex and Violence.
Yeah.
You know, you rewatch some of that stuff and you kind of, you know, you get the jokes you didn't get as a kid. You realize Charles Grodin in Great Muppet Caper is on massive amounts of cocaine.
Yes.
Like, you're just like, what is this guy doing? This is crazy nonsense. Because I rewatched that. I rewatched that last year because I had gone to Chicago and basically stayed in that hotel.
Oh,
and
nice.
It's not a real hotel, and it was in London, sir. Yeah, no, I stayed in the Happiness Hotel. Trust me.
Nice.
Trust me, there were rats singing, and there was the whole thing.
Oh, boy.
I mean, if you're gonna do a thing on the Muppets, it would be fun because that would be one that I've never seen, so you'd get to get me to watch a movie I've never seen.
And it's been forever since I watched those movies, though. Like, I remember, I remember the act of watching them. I just don't remember the Muppet movie I remember the most, obviously.
Well, it's the best one.
Really?
Yeah, quiet. What?
Really?
Okay, which one's better? Is it Manhattan?
No.
which one's better than the Muppet movie?
Oh, well, at first I thought you were going to say... I didn't realize you were going to say the Muppet movie. I thought you were going to say Christmas Carol.
No, I'm glad we don't have video right now because my face is utterly perplexed. What on earth do you think is better than the original Muppet movie?
No, I thought... No, when you said what's better than, like, I didn't realize you were talking about the original Muppet movie. I thought you were going to say what's better than Muppet's Christmas Carol. That's what I thought you were going to say.
Which I also have never seen. Like, it's a Christmas Carol. Like.
But it's better than the original story. Trust me, it is.
I mean, it probably is, but it's not better than the Muppet movie.
No, I didn't say that. I didn't say it was. I just said that
Jim Henson apparently set in a freaking submarine to do that opening scene, man.
Hey, man,
crazy.
Absolutely not.
Kermit the Frog rides a bike. I mean, come on, man. And then the animal saves the day because it becomes a giant monster. He's like, animal. Yes. That animal may be my favorite. Anyway.
Folks, back to Muppets Take Manhattan. To at least tie it back to the... Read Star Wars Memories, folks. Read Memories by Craig Miller. These are wonderful books. Craig's story is amazing. We can't wait to talk to him next time on the podcast. Is there anything else we need to say about these two books?
I don't think so. I mean, probably a lot more that we probably should have said, but...
What I do like is reading his chapter in More Movie Memories about the writing life, like transitioning from marketing to being a writer kind of thing. I think that's really, really cool because I've been writing poetry since I was 14 years old, 30 years ago. So, yeah, that anniversary is coming up for me at some point here soon, if it hasn't already passed by now. But yeah, folks, go get these books. They're very, very cool. Very, very fun. If you're a Star Wars, literally, if you're a Star Wars fan, Star Wars Memories, like it's like being a kid in a candy store 50 years ago. That just the way he tells his story, the way that the events are, hearing people talk about George Lucas that have actually, you know, worked for the man and done things like just that. Because George... Basically, folks, you hear Dave impersonate George as a Muppet half the time.
I mean, yeah, it's Kermit.
Yeah, he's you know, what color is yours, blood? Green, I guess. Sure.
Which I have never heard of Kermit and George be... compared like that before. Holy crap.
Listen to the way he talks. I like the Wookiees.
God.
They were based on my dog, Indiana, which I should name another character after. I'd drive around in my truck and with my dog, Indiana, and I was like, wouldn't this be cool if this was a spaceship shaped like a hamburger? And yeah.
Oh God.
I don't know.
Oh boy, we named the dog Indiana. The that's, dog, all, Indiana. I, that's all. That's all.
I got a lot of fun memories of that dog.
Yep. That's all I can hear is Sean Connery's voice in my head. We named the dog we Indiana. Named the
dog Indiana.
Yep.
Had a lot of fun memories of that dog.
That's right. Junior. Who is this Junior? Henry Jones. Anyway, may the force be with you all. I don't know anymore. We're so off the rails, folks.
And he does, for the record, he does touch, I wouldn't say, he does touch more than a little bit on Raiders.
Yeah, he does.
He was around during Raiders.
Yeah, there's a whole chapter on that, I think. I'm pretty sure.
At the egg building.
Yeah. Oh, we didn't even mention the other one, the other big one before we get out of here for the podcast, folks.
Call?
Superman 2.
I mean, it's been a while since, it's been like a couple of weeks. Yeah, you worked on Superman 2?
Yeah.
Hmm.
Yeah.
I remember Superman 2.
Yeah. Let's see. I'm trying to. Where is it? Yeah, more to. Yeah, so post Lucasfilm projects share stories from his work on other iconic films like Superman 2, Dark Crystal, Last Starfighter, and I always
Last got, Starfighter. Yeah, I forgot. Yeah.
I always got. So this is a stupid me thing. I always got Flight of the Navigator and Last Starfighter confused, just as titles, not as what they actually are. But I always think one is the other and the other is the other one, but obviously it's not. And then, besides all the Muppet stuff, Return to Oz, oh my God.
Oh, yeah.
That movie scarred me as a 9-year-old. Oh my God. The Chinese people owe whoever created the characters of the TikTokers in that movie. Yeah, TikTok owes whoever named those characters some money because yikes. The guys with the motorcycle, that movie. Whoa.
Wait, TikTok was the big mechanical guy.
Yeah.
Okay.
Anyway.
I was like, I used him in my D&D campaign.
But no, folks, like I said, Star Wars Memories, More Movie Memories by Craig Miller. Check him out. Very, very awesome. Very, very cool. We are going to go to a quick ad break. I'm going to compose myself, readjust, and come back. We're going to come back for the closing right after this.
So let's say you're looking for a podcast of your favorite 80s comic books, G.I. Joe, Transformers, Ninja Turtles, He-Man, etc. Where are you going to go to find us?
Welcome to Star Joe's Podcast. I'm your host, Ryan.
And I'm Chuck. That's right, everybody. We're the Star Joes. We host a podcast called Star Joe's Podcast, where we talk about your favorite comic books, your favorite toys of all the 80s properties.
Star Wars, G.I. Joe, Transformers, Mask, Thundercats, Voltron, you name it, we cover it. If it's in the 80s, we'll cover it at some point.
Yeah, so what you want to do to find us, you can go to iTunes, you can go to www.starjoes.com.
And remember, the Force will be with you.
Because knowing us is half the battle.
Because the world needs another movie podcast.
The GeekCast Radio Network presents for your listening pleasure, The Cinema Geek.
Hosted by Amanda, Kevin, Matt, and Dan.
Each week we dive headfirst in the landscape of movies as we discuss movie news, play movie games,
go in-depth on reviews,
and even have a top 10 countdown or two.
Also, don't miss our director retrospective series, where we review noted directors' movies film by film.
Bottom line is, if you love movies and love podcasts, you need to experience The Cinema Geeks.
You can find us on iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, or GeekCastRadio.com.
Hello, geeks and geekettes! Looking for a podcast that covers a vast array of topics? Then check out Altered Geek Unleashed, where we discuss our thoughts on this week's geeky news, tech, gaming, television shows, movies, cartoons, comics, and more. So, get altered, get geeky with the Altered Geeks, every Friday on the GeekCast Radio Network.
We brought the entire convention center to the brink of an inter-genre geek war.
Okay, Michael, if we're going to tackle this podcast thing, we've got to do something really special. It has to be cool, daily, in audio form, and undetectable by radar. Something that screams summer. I know, let's do a Phineas and Ferb review podcast. We'll call it the Podcast Organization Without a Cool Acronym, or PALCA for short.
What do you think?
I think if we're not careful, Candace is going to bust us.
You can find Palka on the GeekCast Radio Network, iTunes, Blog Talk Radio, and all of the other methods you find podcasts.
We'll give you the whole seat, but you'll only need the edge.
On the Simplistic Reviews podcast, we talk movies. We talk TV. We talk...
Hello, Julie, what the heck are you doing?
Trying to make our spot sound more exciting by adding explosions.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure you could have got the point across with sound effects, not the real thing.
Download the show on iTunes or at simplisticreviews.blogspot.com.
I'm sure your insurance company will cover that.
No, they won't.
No, they probably won't.
All right, folks, we're back here inside Studio 2009. This is episode 107. 107, a new record. Wait, that's a TMNT line. 12 months of Star Wars, we discussed, sort of, Craig Miller's Star Wars memories and more movie memories. Yeah, absolutely. Obviously, fun conversation as always. Hopefully, next episode, you'll hear our interview with Mr. Craig Miller. After that, we've got the holiday and Lego holiday special episode, and then we've got to close out Star Wars, 12 months of Star Wars for now. We've got the episode 7 to 9 music episode, the scores. And then, folks, we're going to have, which I don't know how we're going to do this. Luckily, this is in December, and we're going to do it all before it airs. But we're going to have 9 days of Columbo. Dave and I are starting Columbo season one. We're going to cover the first 9 episodes of Mr. Falk and Columbo and Just One More Thing and all that other good stuff. So that's what's going to be coming up here on Studio 2009 in the 31 days of December.
We're going to have to wait probably for the second episode before we really get into the One More Thing. And
I
think he might do that in the first one, but he's kind of a different character in the first one.
Yeah. As of this recording, because I was trying to set this up on Tubi to make sure I could go back and rewatch the first season. I had already started watching, before we even discussed doing this, before I even brought it up to you, I had already been watching the show on Tubi TV, and I'm like up to season 2, episode 8 or 9, and I'm like trying, I was trying to get the website of Tubi.tv to re-recognize the fact that I want to go back to season 1, episode 1. It took me like 17 different tries of pressing F5 and resetting all the cookies and everything. I'm like, oh my God, just fucking learn that I want to go back to the beginning. It's not.
I just put the disc in the thing and press play. Yeah. Old man for the win.
Woo. Mr. Technia. Yeah, there you go. So that's what's coming up. And then after the 9 days of Columbo, folks, we've got, I don't know what episode 120 is going to be right now, but we've got the final 10 days are going to be all anniversaries, all movie anniversaries. We've got the 20th anniversary of iRobot, 25th anniversary. What?
Nothing. Just like, okay.
I don't remember.
That was a movie that happened. Let's remember it, I guess.
It was a good movie.
Okay.
Wow. Okay. 25th anniversary of Office Space, 25th anniversary of Bicentennial Man, and then we've got 30th anniversaries for Drop Zone, Terminal Velocity, Pulp Fiction, Forrest Gump, Demolition Man, The Shawshank Redemption, which Dave has never seen, which we will correct that.
There's a couple of those I've never seen.
Yes, and then...
I've never seen.
And then to close out the anniversary episodes, we're going to do the 30th anniversary of Maverick's Street Fighter. We are going to do a double feature featuring the 1994 Mel Gibson-driven Maverick. And then Raul Julia. And
that is
Jean-Claude Van Damme.
Weirdest combination ever.
Street Fighter. Yeah, but Raul Julia as M. Bison.
No. That movie is wonderful.
Like, but Maverick and Street Fighter. Yeah.
I don't know why you'd combine it with Maverick, but like it's because I mean you could do a whole episode on Street Fighter alone.
The problem is I was trying to fit 31 days and I didn't. I wanted to fit in the anniversary of. I don't want to do next year the 31st anniversary of Street Fighter because I hate that.
You could do 30th, 35th, 40th, whatever, that kind of. I
could be like a day one thing, like, welcome to the new year, and here's Street Fighter. Right? And for you?
Maybe.
For me, it was a Tuesday.
That's right.
Oh, like, hang on. I'm checking my calendar. Like, if January 1st is a Tuesday, we it's absolutely not. Have to do that. Like, fuck, it's a Wednesday. Because that is the best, like Raul Julia is in another movie.
Yeah.
he's in a really good movie.
That's right.
Like, playing over the top. Like, it's just, it's kind of heartbreaking that it's his last film, because he's so magnetically good in this. Like that's not a hate watch. That's a, oh my God.
Yeah,
so
No.
But I'm bringing it back to, like, it's so fun that it's bad. Like, it's bad, but it's so bad it's fun. Like, it's just so clunkily written, and just, and then Raul Julia is this other level, and it's just like, it's amazing.
Yeah.
And you're teaming it up with Maverick.
Maverick is a fun comedy 90s thing.
I would team up with, like, the G.I. Joe movie, or I know there's not an anniversary for that, but
I'm trying to think of other things. Well, luckily, we haven't produced that yet, and unless Steve has made the art for it already.
I'm just throwing that. Look, don't.
Yeah.
I don't run your network. I just show up and, like, run my mouth. Authority.
He said it, folks. I didn't say it. He said it.
It's the truth.
Any final thoughts before I run through the closing, sir?
There's this great moment in, I can't remember which book it is. I think it's the second book, even though it's about Lucas and Star Wars. Well, not Lucas and Star Wars, but so Craig is a big fan of THX-1138.
Yep.
And there's a wonderful moment. I won't, because it's in the book, by the book. But there's a wonderful moment where, like, you kind of, I don't know how to explain it exactly. Like, the power of fandom.
Mm-hmm.
Is George comes into his office and sees something that he has, that Craig has, because Craig is a fan.
Yep.
And George, the guy who created it, doesn't have it.
Right. Exactly. Like, how did you get that?
I don't even have that.
Yeah.
And then, of course, you know, Craig gives it to George. But, like, that's, you know, like, I think about, like, Forrest J. Ackerman. I think about all these guys that, like, get their dirty little hands on these bits of things that, like, because the people who make these movies and these TV shows, it's a job. They're not sent to, I mean, some of them, at this point, I think some of them were fans to get in on it, but, like, you know, a lot of them aren't sentimental about it. This is just a prop. This is just a thing. This is just a poster. This is just a thing. Costume. Like, and it's for this thing, and then it's done. It's left to rot. It's thrown away. And fans come in like little rats, like little Jawas, and grab it and preserve it and keep it. And eventually they coalesce into museums. And, you know, like, I, as a collector myself, I generally don't like to own that kind of stuff, because I go full Indiana Jones. It belongs in a museum. Like, I don't want the responsibility of preserving, to me, history, cultural history. But I remember the story about how, like, if you toured Universal at some point, you could see the ships from V, the old 80s science fiction show V. You could just see the fighter ships rotting in the sun, you know. It was sad. Like, there are times where it's sad that this is just a job to these guys, and there is no preservation. There is no sense of, and I think Lucas was ironically, Lucas is one of the guys who kind of bucks that trend. Because he kept the thing we're talking about wasn't the thing that he would necessarily have or keep, but, like, you know, he's got that collection. He had that collection. I don't know who's in charge of it now, but, like, it's a cute little moment between two people. One's a fan of the other, and, like, it's kind of a neat thing. Like, hey, I got something George Lucas doesn't have.
Yeah, it's very, very cool. It's a nice little fan moment. Yeah. And yeah, you're right. Absolutely. Preservation, because, like, you know, what's going to happen in 50 years when we're gone? Whoever else is going to still be here.
Care?
Okay, but yeah, I know, but I'm saying, like,
I always think about, there's a great, I was a big fan, to go off on a tangent, there was this show on Comedy Central called Dr. Katz.
Yep.
Yeah, there's this great one. I can't remember who the comedian was because he played on the show. Katz was a psychiatrist, and then his patients were like stand-up comedians. So the shtick was they would do their routine as like therapy, as he's giving them therapy, they're doing their routines. And I can't remember who it was, but there was some guy talking about how he built Star Trek models, mm-hmm. and how he knew when he died his kids were going to be in the basement, like, what is this crap? Where's all the money? I think about that a lot. In my basement, you know, what is all this crap? Where's all the value?
yeah. Well,
George's kids are like, what is this Mac Cat of Drippy McCool? Where's my $10 billion, Dad?
So, yeah, folks, that's, yeah, things must be preserved. All right. Yeah, so that's going to do it for this episode. Thank you for joining us here inside Studio 2009. If you'd like to get in contact with us, leave feedback for the show. There's several ways to do so. Visit the website, geekcastradio.com, where you can listen to and comment on all of our content. Send any email to feedback@geekcastradio.com. You can check us out any of the podcatching clients you choose to use. For Apple users, it's Apple Podcasts. For Android users, it's Spotify specifically. That's what I prefer. You can follow us on Twitter @GeekCastRadio for the network, @ItsStudio2009, all one word, for the show. I'm @TFG and Mike. Dave doesn't do Twitter.
Yeah, I got to check the pit traps for trick-or-treaters.
Oh boy.
We're doing this right after Halloween. So.
Yeah, yes, well, it's a Christmas movie, folks.
It's a Christmas movie.
The Nightmare Before Christmas is a Christmas movie, according to everybody. It is. Become a fan on Facebook. Go to facebook.com/GeekCastRadioNetwork. You can also check out Studio 2009 Podcast over there, as well as joining the Toy World Order fans group. Join us next time when we will be interviewing Mr. Craig Miller. Star Wars memories, more movie memories, and all the other geekdoms that Craig... It's going to be a really fun conversation. So, very much looking forward to that. For now, I am TFG and Mike with...
Dave Draper.
And there is back in the studio soon.